Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here. It's Monday morning, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. And because last night NBC ran Jesus Christ Superstar live in concert, which was great, we're going to talk about musicals, best, worst, most memorable musicals, movie musicals, all that kind of stuff. And I happen to be showing, coincidentally, I happen to be showing a musical tomorrow night at my film club screening. Showing Little Shop of Horrors, the director's cut. So we'll talk all about that and more and celebrate musicals. It's also Monday, and that means it's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. Only got a couple of movies to review this week, and we'll get to those right now. So let's welcome Colin. Welcome, Eric. Eric, welcome.
Hello.
And Colin, welcome.
Hello there.
Hey, did either of you guys watch Jesus Christ Superstar?
No.
Oh, it was so good. It was really, 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 really good, and the guy who plays the guy who played Judas at the end, he played Aaron Burr in Hamilton at one point. He played Judas in this, and at the end, during his curtain call, he did the Wakanda Forever thing, which I thought was pretty great. So anyway, so nobody went to go see the Tyler Perry movie. Acrimony.
What else is new?
Now you guys know he shot in 8 days, right?
That was this movie? I thought that was maybe the next one.
No, it's this one.
Okay.
Because, I mean, he and Taraji P. Henson were doing press like crazy. They were on all the late night shows over the past week, and that was a point of conversation every single time they shot it in 8 days.
He shot it in 8 days.
Yeah, so it probably sucks on a completely different level.
Yeah.
This time. So, Acrimony.
Twice as many days as the last Madea movie.
The one piece of advice I wouldn't give Tyler Perry with his filmmaking is work faster.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I mean, the guy releases 15 movies a week. So,
seemingly.
And we'll talk about the box office. His movies have gone down in terms of like what they're making now, right?
Yeah, for the non-Madea films.
For the non-Madea films. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, just two movies to talk about this week. Colin, why don't you tell us about Isle of Dogs?
All right. Well, this is the latest from Wes Anderson, and it's another animated feature, his first since Fantastic Mr. Fox. And it takes place in Japan, they say it's Japan, but this is a Wes Anderson movie, so it's kind of in its own world, really. But it's during a time when dogs have been banned from the country due to a spread of the so-called dog flu, which has been killing people. And so all the dogs are sent to Trash Island instead of being put down or euthanized, they're sent to Trash Island. And the mayor who set this in motion has a 12-year-old orphan son or ward of the state named Atari. And he sets out on a mission to find his dog, Spot, who was among the first dogs to get sent to Trash Island. May have been the first dog, I think. Anyway, Atari... his plane crash lands there, and he has the help of five dogs who are kind of the main characters of the piece, but these five dogs are very loyal to each other, and they help him find spots. And there's a couple other threads going on here. There's a scientist who is working on a dog flu cure serum, and there's an exchange student who's a journalist investigating the whole dog problem for her school newspaper. I haven't really mentioned any voices here yet because it's just easier to go through the plot and not interrupt by telling you who everyone is and lose my train of thought, because there are so many characters and many recognizable names and voices in this thing. You got Bryan Cranston, you got Edward Norton, Bob Balaban, Bill Murray, Jeff Goldblum, Francis McDormand, Scarlett Johansson, F. Murray Abraham, Yoko Ono has a voice in this, playing a character named Yoko, Tilda Swinton, Ken Watanabe, Liev Schreiber. I mean, it's just so full of people, obviously. And so I've been kind of a mixed reaction to Wes Anderson's work over the years. For the most part, I mean, he's directed 9 feature films. And for the most part, I like most of them. But I seem to have the same reaction to them in varying degrees since Royal Tenenbaums, which is still my favorite of his and still a great film. But everything after that has been kind of like, yeah, I like looking at it, but I'm just not, I just don't feel anything when I watch it. And that is definitely the case here. This is a movie that, you know, I'm a big animation geek. You guys know that. And I always go into a movie like this, especially stop motion animation or claymation, you know, I will defend it for just existing sometimes. And this is a movie that I really want to like it more because it is so beautiful to look at. The texture of it, the look of the film, just everything about the movie is eye candy to me. It's great to look at. And people should see it on the big screen if they have an interest in seeing it at all. So I'm not going to deter people from that. But I just didn't care about this story. I just didn't care about the Atari kid finding his dog. It just didn't connect with me emotionally. And, you know, the subplots going on here, the Scarlett Johansson character, I just felt completely thrown in there because I don't know, it just felt wedged into this piece, but it didn't really seem necessary. And I just think Wes Anderson had a better result when he did animation, when he did Fantastic Mr. Fox, because he had Roald Dahl's book as an anchor. He made a lot of changes to the book, which was fine. But it just had more, I cared more about the characters in that one, and it just had more of a story that I felt really connected to, and, you know, really worked on repeat viewings. I've seen that movie a few times now. But this one, I'm just not excited to go back and look at again. You know, maybe I will at the end of the year just to see how the rest of the year goes as far as animation, who knows. But for this one, this is just a lesser effort, in my opinion.
Okay. All right, Eric, what about you?
Well, it's like Colin reached a bit into my brain, and yet I still have some opposite feelings on some of the things that he was saying there. I've been off the Wes Anderson train for a while now for a few of the reasons that Colin mentions. Just I found his style increasingly just unnerving in a way that it seems like he's always going for, like, a look how clever I am with this gag, rather than, you know, expanding upon the kind of, you know, emotionality that he got out of the Royal Tenenbaums. Like, in that movie, you actually feel something along with the quirkiness. And it seems that the more he's gotten over time, the quirkiness has taken over and the look has taken over. And, you know, all the mannerisms are all up on screen for you to see. And his themes are all up on screen for you. The same stuff all the time. And I got tired of it. I didn't like Moonrise Kingdom. I hated Grand Budapest Hotel. Now, with this movie, though, I was a bit more interested in the story than Colin was, and I was not a huge fan of Fantastic Mr. Fox. I thought it was okay, but I think that this film had, for me, the same issues that Fantastic Mr. Fox did, that after a while, as much as I wanted to look at the animation, I just stopped caring about what was going on. Anderson has a way of telling a story that, for me, just completely disengages me. It just, like, you know, he's almost like lulling me into a, you know, a nice cozy nap, which I did during Mr. Fox and a bit during this movie as well. I liked the story. I mean, I do love dogs, and you know, I thought that there was some clever stuff going on, and I liked the voice work in the movie. But I couldn't keep my wits about me, you know, watching this thing. And by the end of it, I was just kind of like, well, that was fine. And I was, by the end of it, I was curious if I would watched again. I think I kind of do want to watch it again for a number of reasons, both to see if it, you know, what I missed for one, and you know, some of the cultural aspects that are being brought up in certain reviews of this thing. I'm very curious to see if that, you know, would have any greater effect on me the second time. But I guess, you know, in terms of Wes Anderson, for me, this is kind of a step up, but there's just something about his filmmaking that loses me about halfway through. In this case, losing me halfway through is more than some of the other movies. So again, kind of an improvement, but I'm still not quite there, and I kind of want to give it a second viewing.
Okay. All right. We'll take a break, and then I'll tell you what I thought. Eric, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
And Colin, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
And we will come back, and I'll tell you what I thought of Wes Anderson's movie, Isle of Dogs. Only got two movies to talk about this week, so we'll take a break. We got the news, and then we'll come back and get my thoughts on Isle of Dogs right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. What's going on? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. This is where we do our Monday morning show, and we do it from the Showcase studio downstairs Tuesday through Friday. I'm your overnight dude, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your Monday morning drive. And we're going to be talking about musicals, movie musicals, your favorite musicals, in honor of last night's incredible performance of Jesus Christ Superstar on NBC, and of the fact that I'm showing a musical tomorrow, Little Shop of Horrors, at my film club. So that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, but the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Eric Childress, Colin Suter, they join me every week to review the movies. By the way, my dad will be calling in because it's Monday morning and he's going to tell a joke. But let's welcome the guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. Eric and Colin were both mixed, to say the least, on Isle of Dogs. Okay, let me just preface this by saying that I am still on the train. I am conducting the Wes Anderson train, and I love all his movies except for Life Aquatic. That's the only one that I have issues with. All of the other ones I love. And I loved Grand Budapest Hotel. I thought Moonrise Kingdom was beautiful and funny and awesome. I loved Fantastic Mr. Fox. I'm one of the few people that liked Darjeeling Limited. Like you guys, Royal Tenenbaums, I think, is the best movie he's ever made. I thought this movie was terrific. I thought it was great. And I'm a sucker for Wes Anderson. What can I say? I like his style. I was involved in the story. I did think it was interesting. I loved all the different characters. The voice work is great here. It's really funny as well. There's a lot of laughs in this movie. And like Fantastic Mr. Fox, I think it's visually, it's just sumptuous and beautiful and fantastic to watch. I was with this all the way. And again, I mean, you know, the trademarks and the quirkiness of Wes Anderson, I mean, that's just the way he makes his movies. And I just think, I think he's great, and I love his sensibility, and I love his style, and I love the fact that he's gone back to do this stop motion animation, because it's a real, you know, taxing process, as you guys know. It takes forever to put these kind of movies together, and I think it's beautiful, you know, visually. I think, you know, this insane all-star lineup of actors and actresses that he's got in here, they all work together really, really well, and he wrote the stuff, clearly wrote many of the things for those specific performers, and I thought it was terrific. I was on board all the way. I was invested emotionally. I laughed a lot, and I think it's a beautiful movie to look at, filled with really cool inventive sequences, and if you're a fan of Wes Anderson, I mean, this is just Wes Anderson, 100% Wes Anderson. So, and I know that that's just a, you know, that's just, it depends on your taste for the guy. I mean, if you like his stuff, this is his stuff, and there's no mistaking it. Like, you watched 3 minutes of this movie, and you know who directed it. You know who put it together, and I happen to think he's great. So I really liked Isle of Dogs a lot, a really, really lot. So anyway, there you go. You guys remember that SNL sketch that they did where it was the horror movie directed by Wes Anderson?
Yes.
You remember that?
Was it Edward Norton?
Yeah, Edward Norton played Owen Wilson.
Right.
And, yeah, and it was absolutely hysterical. And that's a great send-up of like the style that Wes Anderson has. And I know some people don't have patience for it. I know, Eric, you don't. But I think he's great. And I have always thought he was great. And I can't wait for his next movie. And I just think he keeps knocking it out of the park. And I love the guy. So I'm a big fan of Isle of Dogs. So I guess I'm all alone on that. So.
You're not alone.
Okay. Are either of you guys coming to tomorrow night to see Little Shop?
Oh yeah, I'm going to try. Okay. I have to do I got something I got to do beforehand, so okay. I'm going to try to get there.
All right. Well, and Colin, this will be the first time that I've ever seen the alternate ending on the big screen.
Yeah, me too. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I've seen the alternate ending, of course, and it's great. It's one of the few movies that has two endings, and I like both of them.
Right.
You know, you show me either one, and I'll be happy.
Yeah. I saw the Little Shop of Horrors, the alternate ending. It was on one of your Christmas DVDs.
Yeah. Yeah, they had it. They originally released it on DVD on the very first pressing of the DVD, and which they pulled off the market like 2 weeks later. But the video store I worked at, we had it, and we hung on to it and stopped renting it out because it became a collector's item. So we got a new one, and so I was able to have that for a while. And it was just a black and white work print,
right?
It was really cut together nicely, like it is right now. So, yeah, it's an interesting story with that one.
Yeah, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Frank Oz taped an introduction. So I think Frank Oz is going to introduce the print we have.
That's so cool.
So it'll be like he'll give you sort of like a behind-the-scenes thing. And I'll talk about it, too, afterwards. We can talk about, you know, why the ending was changed and how it was changed and all that stuff. But, I rewatched it a couple of times over the past, you know, like 10 days.
Yeah.
It's great, man.
It's so great. I'm so excited.
It is so great, and the music is so good, and everybody is so good in it. And my favorite, you know, there are a lot of, like, little small roles, cameos, played by some big, you know, big names. It's like John Candy, Bill Murray, you know, people like that. But I got to tell you, my favorite cameo in the whole thing is Christopher Guest as the first customer who comes in and sees the strange and unusual plant.
Yeah.
Just absolutely hilarious. So it's going to be so much fun to see on the big screen. So I hope everybody can make it. It's tomorrow night. Go to amctheaters.com to reserve your seats now. It's only $9.99 to get in. Little Shop of Horrors on the big screen at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly MovieCo. Easy to get to. Parking is free. And we're going to show the alternate ending, and we'll talk about it afterwards. So it's going to be a blast. All right. All right, Eric. Hey.
Hey.
This is a new movie by this guy, this director guy.
Yeah, Spielman or something, right?
Yeah, that you kind of enjoy.
Yeah, speaking of directors that you were a sucker for, or at least I'm a sucker for.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg has another new movie. He just had one called The Post a few months ago.
Yeah, it's two
movies. He's got another one now called Ready Player One.
Two movies in 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is he, Tyler Perry?
Yeah. Well, this one didn't take 8 days. It took like 3 years. That he's been working on this thing because there's obviously very extensive special effects involved. But for people who don't know what Ready Player One is, it's based on a now very popular kind of sci-fi novel, the pop culture novel called Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. And its story is set in the future. I think 2045 is the year it's set in the future.
Right.
And the world has sort of become, at least in Columbus, Ohio, almost like one big slum. It just seems like everyone is all tightly packed together, and everyone's on top of each other or below each other. And the only solace that they seem to have is through this virtual reality experience known as the Oasis, where you put on your virtual reality mask, you go in there, you can be a character, whoever you want, and you play games, you do missions, and you collect coins, like all the old video games, and that becomes your currency. Well, one of the creators of the Oasis, played by Spielberg regular now, Mark Rylance, has died. But he has poised a challenge to everyone out there who uses his Oasis, that he has hidden three special keys throughout different challenges within the gaming experience. And anyone who can find all of these keys will take over the Oasis. They will own the Oasis and have control of it. So you have a very Willy Wonka-like situation going on. That's clearly one of the many inspirations for this movie. Ty Sheridan plays a young man who is, like everyone, obsessed with being a part of this game. And he takes on the challenge to, you know, figure out exactly where these keys come from. There are other challengers in the game. Olivia Cooke plays another gamer, hacker, who is trying to solve the keys herself. Ben Mendelsohn plays the head of a very large tech corporation who is trying to take control of the Oasis himself, and all of his employees are basically forced to get inside there and play the game themselves to try so they can take control of the thing. So you have a number of these things going on, and you know, in typical Spielberg fashion, this is going back to you know, some of his old roots. I mean, people, you know, he's been sort of more interested in more adult fare as of late. And this is a story that sort of really touches his inner child. It's a story of a book that was laden with 80s pop culture references and a lot of new tech sci-fi stuff. So it was just kind of a blast to sort of revisit a lot of that stuff. And Spielberg, you know, sort of approaches it with that kind of gamer kid style that he's, you know, not just, you know, brought to big screens all over the place, but in his own life. You know, when I saw the movie at South by Southwest, he talked about how, like, on the set of Jaws, I think, that, you know, he, like, had, like, one of the original Pong games, machines. So he's a gamer from way back, and he has followed that all through this, up to this movie. And it's so great seeing Spielberg have this sort of fun again. There are set pieces in this movie. You know, Spielberg has been one of the great manufacturers of action set pieces throughout time, and he nonstop in this movie. There is a racing sequence that is as much fun as, you know, some of a lot of the previous stuff he's done in the past. The build up, the movie, the battle between the kids and the gamers and this big corporation leads to a lot of really exciting standoffs and stuff. The soundtrack is so much fun. I mean, this is a movie clearly designed for the generation that grew up on his movies. It is built tight for these people. And like I said, out of South by Southwest, when I got out of this movie, I thought about, you know, like, for like guys like Colin, myself, all the old Spielberg movies are our Spielberg movies: Jaws, Close Encounters, Raiders, E.T. But then you have a new generation where they kind of started with Jurassic Park. And that was sort of like I've seen a lot of people this weekend, like, revisiting Jurassic Park and talking about how that movie kind of spark them. And I think Ready Player One, for a new generation now, is going to be the film that draws people back into the Spielberg world of yesteryear. And wow, talk about an oasis. What a world they're going to get a chance to go into. I had a lot of fun with this movie, as I talked about at South by Southwest. It was fun watching Spielberg have fun again. It's funny in spots. It doesn't quite have that knock out of the park Spielberg charm to it that I've just experienced so many times in the past, but this is a movie that I absolutely can't wait to revisit again and again and see how it holds up over time.
Okay. All right, Eric, Colin, hang on. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got to take a break, and Eric reviewing Ready Player One, Steven Spielberg's new movie. We'll come back, find out what Colin thought of it and what I thought of it as well, but we're going to take a break right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we are here until 5 a.m., and we're going to be talking about musicals. What are the best musicals in honor of the terrific telecast of Jesus Christ Superstar from last night? So we're going to be talking musicals. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. Right now, though, we are in the middle of the Monday morning movie reviews. Not a lot to review, only two movies this week. Before the break, Eric Childress told us about Ready Player One, and he really enjoyed it and can't wait to see it again. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Colin, what did you think?
Well, I'm pretty much in agreement with Eric on this one. And, you know, this is something that I've been wanting Spielberg to do for a while now, which is, and he's been trying, you know, to kind of get back, get another, you know, big sort of rousing blockbuster from those early years, you know. And it's been kind of, it's a success that's been kind of eluding him. I mean, the last Indiana Jones movie was a box office success, but not, many would say not really an artistic success, or, you know, it's certainly not fondly remembered by most people. And then you have The Adventures of Tintin and the BFG, which didn't really connect. And so, you know, it's like, really, this was kind of the one that is the last one, or his last chance, it almost feels like, you know, to try one of these out. And it's finally, you know, he finally got it right, and the way I look at it, this is a lot of fun. And one of the reasons why it's a lot of fun, it's because it's Spielberg's turn to play in the nostalgia sandbox that we've been seeing a lot of in the last, you know, couple decades, really. A lot of 80s and 90s nostalgia. You look at the Cornetto trilogy, TV, got Stranger Things, of course, is steeped in this stuff. And Spielberg is a big part of that. His movies, you know, are just iconic, and of course they're often used as reference points. And so now it's Spielberg's turn to be a fan, and this is the stuff he's a fan of. Is he really a fan of Chucky movies? I don't know, but it's fun to see something like that pop up just out of nowhere.
And also
thousands of
also huge laugh.
Yeah, oh yeah,
huge laugh. So
yeah. And I promise I'm not going to give away anything more than that.
No.
It's just fun to see this stuff kind of thrown into a blender, and it's not all, you know, it's not all his stuff. He's made references to his own movies in his own movies before, just little inside jokes, especially between him and George Lucas.
Yeah.
But he definitely pulled back on this one, except in regards to one particular director. Again, I won't give it away, but this feels like a big tribute to that director, you know, in many ways. And it's just so much fun. And, you know, most of the, you know, people who've written about this movie, they kind of divided between the first half of the film and the second half of the film. First half of the film is just chock full of pop culture references. You can't keep up. And the second half is more story driven, and it's not quite as fun. That was kind of my reaction the first time I saw it. I've seen the film twice. Second time, I think it flows better. This is a male fantasy wish fulfillment thing that is also a staple of, you know, 80s cinema and 90s, I guess, where the boy solves the problems. The boy, gets the girl at the end, and boy is in the computer and saves the world and all that stuff. You know, that's all, you know, that in itself is one gigantic reference point. But I like Ty Sheridan. I think I've always liked him as an actor, and I like Olivia Cooke a lot. She's very appealing. I love Mark Rylance in this film. I think him and Spielberg, it's one of the most fascinating actor-director teams of the last, you know, 10 years. And, you know, quietly so. It's not like, you know, his name is appearing above the title or anything with Spielberg. It's just been a wonderful working relationship, even in something as not very good as the BFG. So that aspect of it is fun. We should probably point out, I don't think any of us read the book.
No, I haven't.
Not all of it.
Okay, so I have no reference point to compare it to. I've not read it, but I really do enjoy this film. And, you know, when you're going in, that's all you got to do. Expect fun. You know, as soon as the opening song hits the opening credits, you're not hearing score at the beginning like you do at a regular Spielberg movie. You're going to hear a pop song, and it sets the tone perfectly. And it's so much fun from that moment on.
Okay. All right. Guys, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
And we'll take a break, and we got the news coming up here. And then after the news, I will tell you what I think of Ready Player One, Steven Spielberg's latest movie, on the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Okay, let's break for the news, and then we'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We are here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. My dad's going to call in and tell a jokey joke. And in honor of last night's fantastic performance of Jesus Christ Superstar on NBC, we are going to talk about great musicals. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Before the break, Colin and Eric gave very positive and fun reviews to Ready Player One, which is Steven Spielberg's new movie. And let's welcome the guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, this is unprecedented, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
This will be the second time in a row that I've liked the Steven Spielberg movie more than you did.
You don't have to do it on my account.
No, I'm not kidding. I don't know what the hell is going on, because I like the post more than you did, and I certainly like this more than you did, because I think this movie is great. I loved every frame of it, and it was so beautifully made and so exciting and so colorful and just alive. And I saw it. I did not see it. Have either of you seen it in 3D?
No. I've seen it in IMAX and 70 millimeter.
Oh, cool. Well, how was it in 70? It must have been great.
I think it's better in 70, just because just the texture of film is always going to be more appealing.
But yeah.
Especially for something like this, I think it made it even just a little more special.
Yeah. I saw it in the Dolby theater.
Oh, yeah.
Which was great. And it was, it was amazing. But I mean, I was on board from the get go. Like you said, when you first hear that song, the opening credits, I was like, "All right, I'm in. I'm in right now." I really liked the cast a lot. Ty Sheridan, Olivia Cooke, man, she rules. Like this and Thoroughbreds in like 3 weeks. What? She's amazing. Ben Mendelsohn is fantastic as the villain. He really is having a great time, clearly, and he plays villains frequently. As you mentioned, Colin, Mark Rylance is so good in this, and so lovely, and like really sweet, and just terrific. Simon Pegg's great. I think TJ Miller's character and his voice work are fantastic. In it, all the supporting characters are really a lot of fun. The kids that work with him in order to try and find the three keys and solve the puzzle. I didn't find the first half any different than the second half. I was on board from the whole thing. That first, car race sequence is just so overwhelmingly insane. By the time King Kong comes out, it's like, what? And all the references and all the things. I'm missing like at least 1,000 references, because a lot of them go by so fast. Let me ask you this. I asked Eric via text over the weekend if he caught something. Colin, I want to ask you. Now, you've seen it twice.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch the War Boys?
No.
They're in there.
Oh, man.
They're in there, man.
There were things that I did catch a couple the second time that
yeah.
I didn't catch before.
No, I mean, they're in there, man. It's very, very, very fast, but they're in there. And and so many of the references are great. There are references to so many directors, a close associate of his. One of the best, American filmmakers alive today is lovingly attributed in this movie, both with music cues and a little tool that is used at one point in the movie. And that just delighted the hell out of me. And there's another section of the movie which we cannot give away. Also about a director that has close ties to Spielberg that involves, that makes it meta, meta, meta.
Mm-hmm.
That entire sequence is my favorite sequence of anything I've seen all year. I was giggling like a lunatic during that entire scene. It's a real treat, man. I mean, really amazing. And I just was all over it, man. I really from the get go. I think this is the best movie, flat out like action adventure fun movie that Spielberg has made in many, many, many years. And I think it delivers on everything that it tries to deliver on. I think it's a success in every moment of this movie. I loved it. I had a blast. My parents had a blast. The entire theater had a blast. And, recognizing some of the references and stuff is always a lot of fun. And I know I'm going to see this multiple times, and I'm just going to be looking, across the frame to try and catch what's in there, because there's so much stuff in there. And I just thought the special effects themselves, the virtual reality stuff, the avatars themselves were really cool and imaginative. And I was with it all the way through, and I was actually emotional at the end. I think that there's a real payoff, especially with Mark Rylance's character, and I think there's a really nice payoff for Ty Sheridan too. And you know, and I think it's unabashedly romantic how it ends, and I was on board the whole time. I really was, and I loved this movie. I loved it. Player One. I've only seen it in the Dolby. I'm going to try it. Is it going to be at the Music Box for just a week in 70?
I don't know. I haven't looked
ahead. 2 weeks.
2 weeks, you said?
2 weeks. They've been doing a lot of 2 week engagements for the 70mm stuff, like Phantom Thread and Dunkirk.
Okay.
So I think it might be 2 weeks.
All right, well, I'm going to try and see it.
Me on that, though.
I'm going to try and see it. I hopefully will be able to see it in 70, but I definitely want to see it in 3D because I think, you know, while I was watching it, I was like, I bet some of this 3D stuff is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the pixelated stuff and all that. I'm sure that looked, you know, that was really cool. And there are moments that I just want to mention that Mendelsohn has in this movie that I just think are great. I think he's fantastic in the movie. I think it's great.
I think I'm looking at Music Box's website right now, and they don't have any screenings listed yet anything after this week. And they have a major movie coming in with guests for the opening weekend, a movie called 1945. So I don't know what the likelihood is of them doing Ready Player One on the big screen again, you keep checking the website, I guess.
I will. Yeah, I will. Anyway, I think it's great. And I have to say, this was a really, for me, a great movie weekend. That's all I'm saying. Both movies that I saw this weekend, I absolutely loved and really had fun watching both of them. And I was just, it was a very good movie weekend. So that's all I'm saying. Okay, what do we got next week? You mentioned 1945.
We got A Quiet Place.
Quiet Place, which
weekend,
is the...
And Blockers.
Mm-hmm. Chappaquiddick.
And I don't know. I think it's supposed to be going wide. Chappaquiddick.
Yeah, no, Chappaquiddick is... it is coming out wide. Because I was watching this really terrible show. I don't know why I was watching it, but I've watched it now for a couple of weeks. It's a show called Funny You Should Ask.
Okay.
And it's six comedians... who are helping? It's basically it's like Hollywood Squares with only six comedians, and they ask people questions. They ask the comedians questions. They make wacky jokes, and it's people like, you know, John Lovitz, Louis Anderson, Tommy Davidson, Jack Hay, people like that are on the panel, and they're asked questions. They make a funny joke, and then they answer the question, and then you agree or disagree, which is exactly like Hollywood Squares, and you win money. Now, who is the creator of this show and the executive producer?
Paul Lynde.
Byron Allen.
Oh,
of course. Every commercial break.
Yeah.
Chappaquiddick. Every single commercial break. So, yes, I know for a fact it's coming out Friday because I saw 7,000 commercials for it last night.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's what we got to look forward to. And, Colin, I will see you tomorrow night.
Yeah.
For sure. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right.
All right, Colin. Take care, buddy. There you go. All right, Eric, we're going to start with the box office here.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's see. We've got number one, not a real shocker.
No.
Over the weekend, it made $41.4 million, but $53.2 since Thursday.
Yeah, they opened the movie on Thursday because, you know, Easter, you know, fall on Sunday, obviously, the box office tends to be a little bit down.
Right.
So they moved it up a day to sort of give them that extra push, and it was definitely a smart move on their part. The thing is, this is a very expensive movie.
Yeah.
It's a very expensive movie. I mean, even by Spielberg standards, it's a very expensive movie.
Well, and you know what? It's all up on the screen, too.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, there's not a wasted penny.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, the special effects, it's all up there.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And you get your money's worth. But, you know, a $53 million launch in the U.S. is not great. You know, a lot of people, I mean, you've been spinning this in different ways. I mean, it did make another, like, 185 million worldwide. So that's a pretty good start. But this is a movie that's probably going to need to make about 650 to make its money back.
Wow.
So there's going to be a lot of people, you know, playing the, you know, oh, Spielberg lost his touch or whatever. It's just like, you know, it's still like the second biggest opening of the year
right.
so far.
Right.
You know, so there are a lot of different ways to look and spin this stuff and just like, oh, Spielberg has lost his magic touch. I'm like, yeah, but all the movies he made that are huge successes opened in the 70s and 80s to like $7, $8 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, there's not really a modicum of comparison when you look at all the $100 million openers now. They're all Marvel movies and Transformers and franchise movies. And
right.
So to have like an original, you know, science fiction movie where really the key selling point is Spielberg, you know, that's something that, you know, people have to consider. So
yeah.
I think it's okay. You know, I think word of mouth is going to be very positive. I've heard a lot of even people that were not expecting to like this movie come out like really liking it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think word of mouth is going to be good, but I think A Quiet Place is going to do very well next weekend.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I will say this, Eric, it exceeded my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Ready Player One did, and hugely. I mean, I was actually looking forward to it, you know.
Yeah.
But I had a blast.
I think it's going to play very well through April. There's not a whole lot coming out between now and Avengers.
Yeah.
So I think it'll play fine.
Yeah. Okay.
But we'll see.
Tyler Perry's Acrimony comes in at second, $17.1 million. Again, we talked a little bit earlier about how his movies don't gross as big as they used to, especially when Medea's not involved.
Yeah, he was pretty much, I mean, his relationship with Lionsgate was almost dead about 3 years ago, and then he did that Madea Halloween movie.
Right.
And all of a sudden, people came back. Even the Halloween, the Boo Madea Halloween 2 or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't do great, but it did okay. I mean, $17 million, that's still, it's in the bottom of his, bottom five of his all-time openers, which that's still not terrible.
Frankly. It's also, I mean, if he shot the movie in 8 days, what was its budget? It couldn't have been
right.
Much.
Exactly. I haven't been able to find an actual cost on this thing yet.
Yeah.
But that's one of the reasons why there was such a problem, is because his budgets were going up.
Mm.
So whether or not, I mean, whether that's because they're paying him or what, you know, whatever, but his budgets were going up and the grosses were going down, and that was like a steady thing that was happening. So if he kept this thing like to like Blumhouse levels, then yeah, that the movie's going to be just fine.
And he also, I mean, the guy is, you know, he owns his own studio in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he films everything there. They've got movies that film there all the time, you know, including Black Panther film there. So this guy's, mm-hmm. he's fine.
Oh, yeah. No one's worried about Tyler Perry.
No, Tyler Perry is fine, man.
Yeah.
He's fine. All right, speaking of Black Panther, man, and this is really impressive, $11 million in its sixth week.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
$650 million.
Just in America.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, this movie. Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. This is one of the, it's going to be the third highest all-time grosser in America.
That is really amazing. What a story. And mm-hmm. I really hope it sticks in there and stays in the top 10 until Avengers comes out, because I really want Black Panther to be in two movies in the top 10.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know what? I think it's going to happen.
I think so, too. Think so, too. People are going back and seeing Black Panther a lot. I mean, $11 million in its sixth week.
I think even if there's the remote possibility that it does fall out of the top 10, the release of Avengers Infinity War, if Black Panther's still in some of those theaters, people will be going back to see Black Panther maybe after Infinity War.
Yeah. You're,
or before.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. Number four, I Can Only Imagine, $10.7 million, $55.5 million. This is a hit.
Oh, God, is it a hit.
Yeah.
The biggest hit in the history of roadside attractions, who normally only, you know, release specialty releases. Their top two biggest films before were Manchester by the Sea and Mud.
Yeah.
So this is a huge success for them, and that's about to pass a number of other of the faith-based movies, The Shack and Miracles from Heaven and The Son of God. Can it hit $91 million, which is what Heaven Is for Real made?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was Easter, so it obviously got a boost. Roadside has been constantly upping its theater count.
Yeah.
So we'll see if it trails off next week, but I don't think it's going to trail off that much. So I think that you're probably looking at probably north of $75 million on this.
Wow. Boy, boy, oh boy. Number five, Pacific Rim Uprising. What a drop, man.
67% drop.
$9.2 million, bringing its total up to $45.6 million. Boy, oh boy, it's being beaten by I Can Only Imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Dropped from number one to number five. I mean, this is an example of betting on a film that was clearly built for an international audience.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, you know, that's the reason they made it. And mm-hmm. it's doing fine overseas. It's not doing fine enough.
Right.
because this thing now looks like it might not make it, you know, it might barely make 60 if it makes 60 here in the U.S. It'll probably have another huge drop next week with A Quiet Place opens. I mean, nobody was calling for this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Sherlock Gnomes, Love, Simon, and then Tomb Raider, $4.7 million. It's only up to $50 million. That's not good.
Not good in the U.S., but again, it has been doing pretty well overseas. So it's not a gigantic flop. I wouldn't even call it a flop. It's more of a disappointment. But if it can make about another $60 million overseas, it could end up turning a profit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is a little surprising.
Well, I just hope they make a sequel just because I want her to be in it.
I know, you do.
All right. And then finally, A Wrinkle in Time. Is that going to make $100 million?
No.
Oh, wow.
No. This is one of the few marks on Disney's ledger right now.
By the way, Disney just bought WWE. Did you read that?
No. Seriously?
Yes, Disney bought WWE.
They bought WWE?
Unless it was a practical joke, unless
that's
it was an April Fool's joke.
That's got to be a practical joke.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's got to be.
But
it was posted. It was April 1st, so maybe it was a practical joke. I didn't read it. I just saw the headline, and I scanned right past it. So, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Well, they also were posting that Rizzo got traded to the Cardinals.
I saw that one.
So they're
I saw that Edgar Wright or no, was it Edgar Wright? That someone was making. Well, I saw one that someone was going to make a adult Short Round movie with Ken Jeong.
And they also I saw Lin-Manuel Miranda was going to do a musical version of The Room.
Yeah, that saw that one. Too, oh no, so. It was Edgar Wright and somebody else. The joke was that they were doing an updated of your favorite Ferris Bueller.
Oh God,
a Save Ferris series.
So the Disney probably didn't buy WWE, but it was.
I don't think so.
It would be pretty funny if it did. All right, Eric, thanks, man. Maybe I'll see you Tuesday. If not, I'll talk to you next week.
I hope so. Thanks.
But take care. There you go, Eric Childress, everybody. That's box office and movie reviews. And we're going to take a break. We're going to start talking about musicals. What are your favorite musicals? And if you watched Jesus Christ Superstar last night, man, was that great.